Good morning, and welcome to the Cyber Smart Morning News Update. With the always evolving world of cyber threats and defense, you need a source you can trust. FBI retired Special Agent Darren Mott guides you through today's intricate cyber landscape and brings you the latest headlines and insights and what it means to you. Let's dive into today's cyber news.
Morning, friends. It is Monday, March 11th, 2024. This is the Cyber Smart Morning News Update. I'm your host, retired FBI Supervisory Special Agent Darren Mott. As always, thank you so much for taking the time to download. If you are a frequent downloader, you're aware that on Thursday and Friday last week, I did not have a podcast. I had a couple of things come up for the Thursday podcast, and it got me thinking that doing this every day for a couple months has been... It's been getting a little tough to do it every day simply from a time perspective. In working a full-time job, trying to do my other podcast, which I'm letting down on for that one as well, and doing some other stuff. Doing this every day has been fun for me from an experiential standpoint, but I think I need to retool how I do this. So I've decided to make this podcast a 3-day-a-week podcast. It'll be Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Monday, we'll oversee, you know, kind of what happened over the weekend. And there's quite a few interesting things from this past weekend, because obviously the cybercrime problem was not solved over the weekend. Wednesday will be still a deep dive, but onto some whatever big topics there are for the week. And then Friday, I'll still do the op-ed, but I'll also include some other news that may have happened leading into the weekend. So that's how I'm going to do this going forward. As always, I appreciate your tolerance and your sticking with me as I make these changes. If you have thoughts or comments on the changes, if you think it's great, let me know. If you think it's bad, let me know. Get a better suggestion, let me know that. You can always hit me, Darren, at thecyberdad.com. You can message me on LinkedIn is probably the best place to find me. Other social media stuff I don't spend a lot of time on. X a little bit. You can find the Cyber Guy on X. I'm on there frequently, but I don't post a lot other than the podcast and a couple other things. But those are places where you can find me if you have comments on this change in the format of the podcast. If there's a big call to go back to every day, I'll do what I can. But obviously, that's going to be numbers driven. And so since I'm not really reaching a million people a day, I do appreciate those of you who do continue to stick with me and tune in just to kind of see what's going on in the cyber world. So let's get right into it here on this Monday. This first one, when I saw this headline, I was not shocked, but somewhat not even disheartened, just kind of more of a, well, not surprised. So this is from securityaffairs.com, Pierluigi Paganini reporting, threat actors breached two crucial systems of the U.S. CISA, which is the Department of Homeland Security, Cybersecurity, and Infrastructure Security Center. These are the entities that tell us all about the CVEs and how we should protect ourselves and what small businesses should do to stay cyber safe and all that kind of stuff. And here we go. So the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency was hacked in February. The Recorded Future News first reported. In response to the security breach, the agency had to shut down two crucial systems, as reported by a CISA spokesperson and the U.S. officials with knowledge of the incident, according to CNN. One of the systems impacted by the incident is used to facilitate the sharing of cyber and physical security assessment tools among federal, state, and local officials. The second system was holding information related to the security assessment of chemical facilities. Recorded Future News, citing a source with knowledge of the situation, reported that the hack systems were the Infrastructure Protection Gateway and the Chemical Security Assessment Tool. The Chemical Security Assessment Tool holds sensitive industrial information, including the top screen tool for high-risk chemical facilities, site security plans, and security vulnerability assessments. A CISA spokesperson told the Recorded Future News that the initial investigation conducted by the government experts revealed that the attackers exploited vulnerabilities by Avante products used by the agency. Now, keep in mind, this is the same agency that listed out CVEs on these particular issues and somehow apparently failed to correct the same vulnerability. To say I am shocked would be wrong, because I am not shocked. This is not shocking at all. It is likely expected, but it is a sad state that the entities that are telling us how to be good boys and girls in cyberland can't, A, keep it themselves and did not report it when it initially happened. Again, this happened in February, and it's just being reported now in March. Okay, so it's a month. So maybe not a big difference in time, but still. You know, it's a problem. So it does say on February 29th, CISA warned organizations, again, that threat actors were exploiting multiple vulnerabilities in Avante Connect Secure and Policy Secure Gateway. So maybe that's how they knew, right? So maybe, and I'll give them credit, perhaps they, didn't realize that there were vulnerabilities when they got compromised. I'll give them that credit. But there is a paragraph here that says, ironically, CISA warned U.S. organizations about attacks exploiting vulnerabilities in Ivanti software on February 1st. For the first time since its establishment, CISA ordered federal agencies to disconnect all instances of Ivanti Connect Secure and Ivanti Policy Secure products within 48 hours. And this compromise occurs in February. Did they turn theirs off or did they not turn theirs off? Again, perhaps this would be a good time for the Cyber Safety Review Board to get involved and tell us all what happened. Yet we all know we will never find out exactly what happened. But again, it is a, let's not expect the government. Again, let's say you all know this. I worked for the government for 20 years. I know how these things work. Do I trust the government in all things? No one ever should. Do I trust them to be able to do cybersecurity well? I do not. I did not then. I do not now. Not saying they can't do it well, but I'm just saying that this kind of shows the complexity. That's a good word. The complexity of cybersecurity and dealing with it, right? If these entities that this is all they do is deal with these kind of vulnerabilities, can't keep their own system safe. Whew, what's everybody else going to do who's not paying attention? So again, goes to prove that if you are a small company, a medium-sized company, get help from somebody who kind of knows what they're talking about, can at least lead you down a path to keep yourself protected. Because, I mean, the government's going to try, but they're clearly not doing it very well themselves. This is just another example of that. But I digress. That's a long time on one story. Darkreading.com. This is more from the good news file because someone got arrested. This is Jai Vijayan reporting. I'm sorry, I got a last name wrong. I apologize to him. Google engineer steals AI trade secrets for Chinese companies. Mm-hmm. Chinese national Lin Wei Ding is accused of pilfering more than 500 files containing Google IP while affiliating with two China-based startups at the same time. The U.S. Justice Department has charged a former Google software engineer with stealing artificial intelligence-related trade secrets from Google with an eye to using it at two AI-related firms he was associated with in China. You can also assume that these firms were also associated with the Chinese Communist Party, as most country companies over there are. If convicted, Li Wen Ding, a.k.a. Leon Ding, faces up to 10 years in prison and a fine of $250,000 on each of four counts of trade secret theft on which he has been indicted. So there's two ways this will go. He'll get indicted just on stealing trade secrets without the nation-state designation, which has a lesser penalty, or if they can prove that he was instructed by China to do this, then he will get hit with a heavier charge, which is theft of intellectual property to benefit a nation state. So hopefully that's the one he gets charged with, but those are hard to prove because you actually have to have evidence that he was working with the Chinese government to do this. Two Chinese startups, they're going to have to make that connection, whether they do or not, who knows. But at least he was arrested, stopped the information, hopefully taken before he was able to pass it along. But in the digital world, hard to say. Obviously, there is a lot more of this article if you want to read it, but I only have limited time here, so I don't want to spend all day on one topic. This may be something maybe we talk about further down the week. Cyberscoop.com. If you remember, this is Elias Grohl reporting. If you remember a couple months ago, we mentioned that Microsoft had been compromised by Russian state actors. Well, here we go. Russian hackers access Microsoft source code. An incident attributed to the Russian hacking group Cozy Bear that was first disclosed in January continues to affect Microsoft systems. This was, I probably saw some version of this article on four or five different news sites, so clearly it was important. In January, Microsoft disclosed that Russian hackers had breached the company's systems and managed to read emails belonging to senior executives. Now, the company has revealed that the breach was worse than initially understood, as it always is, I added for emphasis, and that the Russian hackers accessed Microsoft source code. Friday's revelation made in a blog post and a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, funny that how these always happen on Friday when everybody's going for the weekend, is the first in a string of breaches affecting the company that have raised major questions in Washington about Microsoft security posture. Yeah, it sucks, no kidding. The company's filing with the SEC describes the incident as ongoing, stating that the threat actor used and continues to use information in it obtained to gain or attempt to gain unauthorized access to some of the company's source code repositories and internal systems. Microsoft has linked the attacks to the hacking group it tracks to as Midnight Blizzard, but is more popularly known as Cozy Bear. The group is believed to be a unit of Russian Foreign Intelligence Service, or SVR, and one of the Kremlin's most capable hacking units. These are the ones that were responsible for all the stuff that happened in the 2016 election cycle and have done a bunch of stuff since. I think they were SolarWinds also. But don't quote me on that one. So a little bit more to this if you want to read it. But again, it just goes to show the biggest software company in the world can't keep their shit straight. So, I mean, and again, it's small companies find help somewhere because you're going to need it. They're coming for you. Apologize for swearing. Cyberscoop.com, Derek Johnson reporting. White House Advisory Group says market force is insufficient to drive cybersecurity and critical infrastructure. No kidding. An industry leading led group is calling for the federal government to develop economic incentives for small and medium businesses, simplify cyber regulations and provide clear liability protections around information sharing. That's interesting. I don't disagree with much of that. A White House advisory board is recommending the federal government create new economic incentive programs to prod critical infrastructure owners and operators to raise their cybersecurity standards, develop new liability protections around information sharing, and simplify an increasing complex national cyber regulatory. Now, I will say this. I don't agree with a lot coming out of the White House, regardless of Democrat, Republican, that they all suck. They're all idiots. But this makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of things you can do here that certainly seem to go in the right direction, if you ask me. But let's continue on. The recommendations are part of a report approved Thursday by the National Security Telecommunications Advisory Committee, which is made up of representatives from the nation's largest telecommunications companies, as well as cybersecurity firms. So there's the thing here, right? This advisory board is made up of people that are not politicians. That's why they're making sense. The report focused on why so many organizations that provide critical services to the nation often struggle to adopt best practices or invest sufficient resources into their cybersecurity operations. It concluded that the market forces alone are insufficient to incentivize privately owned entities to prioritize cybersecurity at the levels needed to protect national security. So there's more of this if you want to take a look at it, but I talked to a guy once. He made a good point that if you gave companies tax breaks for doing smart cybersecurity things, because those things cost money and you gave them tax breaks for doing it, that might be a way to go. This might be something that this particular advisory group is recommending. So look for more of this group coming out, hopefully with some more direct information. I haven't read the report yet, but I'll probably look at it after this, see what it's like, and maybe talk about it on LinkedIn. Man, it might be a good Friday op-ed, if you ask me. Bleeping Computer, Ionet Ilescu reporting. Critical Fortinet flaw may impact 150,000 exposed devices. Scans of the public on the public web show that approximately 150,000 Fortinet FortiOS and FortiProxy secure web gateway systems are vulnerable to a CVE, which is 2024-21-762, a critical security issue that allows executing code without authentication. CISA confirmed last month that attackers are actively exploiting the flaw, and they added it to their known exploited vulnerabilities catalog, or KEV. These are occurring all over the world. The severity score on this particular vulnerability is 9.8. It is patchable, but certainly people are not patching it or updating to newer versions of Fortinet's operating systems. So I would recommend if you are a Fortinet user, you probably make sure your stuff is updated and locked down, but chances are it is not. It does say, according to Shadow Server data, The most vulnerable devices, more than 24,000 in the United States, followed by India, Brazil, Canada. So we're number one here, but probably because we have more of them, obviously. So again, if you have Fortinet, update the damn thing as quickly as possible. SCmedia.com, Change Healthcare hacker may be linked to China espionage groups. This is interesting, right? Because Change Healthcare is believed to have been an ALF-V ransomware attack. But there may be a collaboration here between China and Russia. An ALF-V Black Hat ransomware gang affiliate that claimed responsibility for last month's Change Healthcare Act may be linked to state-backed cyber espionage groups in China. The hacker, who calls themselves Nachi, vented on a dark web forum that Black Hat did not pass on their cut of an apparent $22 million extortion payment following the highly disruptive attack. Black Hat, meanwhile, has gone to ground in what appears to be an exit scam. In a March 6 post, Menlo security researchers said they'd obtained evidence to back up industry speculation that Chinese state-sponsored entities were involved in the Change Healthcare attack. Some of our human intelligence sources with direct contact to Nachi says it's highly probable that Nachi is associated with Chinese nation-state groups, the researcher said. However, these allegations of Chinese nation-state associated lack of validation, and we're closely monitoring about. So it big if true, right? If this is true, that's a huge thing, because it shows a change in how China is doing what they do. And it makes sense, because China is known for stealing all sorts of information and using ransomware as a front end to back end steal information makes perfect sense to what China's activity is. As always, more information on this article if you want to look at it. This is going to be a longer podcast than normal because of the front end explanation, so apologies for that. But here's the last one. And this is just a highlight for something that really not is a common every year occurrence now. This is Damian Black reporting for cybernews.com. According to the FBI, investment fraud tops the list of costliest cybercrime. Cybercrime in the U.S. cost an estimated $12.5 billion last year, and that's just the incidents that were reported to the FBI. But while ransomware groups like Lockbit might enjoy high-profile notoriety, it's online investment fraud that hurts American wallets the most. This is the important thing. We hear a lot of this is I tag this to news entities who don't do enough research onto all of this, the scope and depth and breadth of cybercrime incidents. They focus a lot on ransomware, makes a big splash because obviously a lot of people are impacted, but it's not even in the top 10 from a financial loss perspective. So the Bureau's specialized IC3 cyber reporting department made the disclosure in its annual report published on March 7th. ICE had to field an average of 2,412 complaints a day, bringing the total number received since its creation at the beginning of the century to over 8 million. The most damaging form of cybercrime in terms of financial costs in 2023 was investment fraud, where people or businesses are duped online into sinking money into fake ventures, which cost victims $4.57 billion, a 38% rise on the previous year's total of $3.31 billion, which was also number one in 2022. These scams are designed to entice those targeted with the promise of lucrative returns on their investments, said the FBI, adding that investment fraud, including cryptocurrency, or involving cryptocurrency rather, rose from $2.57 billion in 2022 to $3.94 billion, an increase in 53%. What he's referring to here is pig butchering. And you see, there's a lot of this going on. There was a good article I posted on LinkedIn last week, or maybe the week before, that was an older article, but it talked about how a guy was basically wiped clean due to a pig butchering scheme where he met someone online who said he could make all sorts of money to save his family if he invested in all this cryptocurrency stuff. He did so, lost millions of dollars. It's horrible. It's a horrible, horrible scam, and it's impacting, you know, lots of people who want to make money quick, and people just fail to realize that there is no quick wins on the internet or with investments, but these scammers know how to touch on people's soft spots and make them invest and do things that they're not supposed to the event of to the tune of like $4 billion. And again, this is reported loss. You can probably double or triple that amount of loss for people who are just too embarrassed to report. I actually talked to a guy at a conference once who lost a sum of money. He wouldn't tell me and never reported it, but he came in after the presentation and told me what had happened to him, and it was a pig butchering scam. So after investment fraud in terms of lost dollars is business email compromise, which was number one for a while, but now is number two. Second year in a row has been number two. Social engineering scams that hoodwink company employees into signing off on bogus invoices. That's what business email compromise are. These netted $2.9 billion, and there were 22,000 complaints filed with the FBI. Old school confidence tricksters and con artists, it seems, are going nowhere in the digital era. Scammers impersonating tech and customer service support or even government agents resulted in $1.31 billion being stolen from victims last year. So when you get those calls saying they're from Medicare, they're selling you solar panels and all that crap, those are all scammers and tricksters and fraudsters. And I mean, I get 20 of these calls a day. Now, part of it is my own fault, honestly, because I answer them and talk to them, and so they know the number works. Now, why they like getting abused online is beyond me, but whatever. I don't recommend it because more people will call you, but this is going to be a problem. And as always, loss from cybercrime continues to go up. It does say here, the FBI needs you, pledging to continue fighting the evolving cyber threat. The FBI said today's cyber landscape is threatened by a multitude of malicious actors who have the tools to conduct large-scale fraud schemes, hold our money and data for ransom, and endanger our national security. It added, profit-driven cyber criminals and nation-state adversaries alike have the capability to paralyze entire school systems, police departments, healthcare facilities, and individual private sector entities. The Bureau is urging the public to continue to come forward with any tip-offs or complaints it might have about cybercrime and it's all its nefarious forms. Now, one thing I will say, obviously, here's the problem. People should report these things to the IC3. But one thing I will tell you, don't expect like a case opened on your specific issue. It probably will not be. Just from it's a resource issue. I'm not saying that your particular loss is any less important than anyone else's, but it has to do with how many resources can they assign to a particular incident. And it's also based on loss amounts. If you utilize a couple $1,000s, the FBI is just not going to open a case. They don't have enough people to do that. They have to go for the really large cases. And what they'll try to do is collate those losses into similar pools where it's all the same bad guy, and use those collectively to open a case. But it doesn't happen all the time. And just understand, and it's hard. This is hard for people to understand. I hate to say it, but if you lose money online to any of these scams, the chances of you getting your money back is pretty limited. And the chance of anybody going to jail is pretty limited. But the only way the FBI can have success like they did with Lockbit, like they did with Black Cat back in January or December and some other ones, is they still have to have this information where they can make impacts where they can. So, you know, if you become a victim, you should report it to IC3 every time. Just keep your expectations low. That's going to do it for today. As always, I thank you for sticking with me with the podcast. I know this one was a little longer than usual. I may make these a little longer as I can spend more time on these things a little bit more, just to kind of give you more value. As always, thoughts, comments, suggestions on the podcast are welcome. Feel free to email me, Darren@thecyberguy.com. Cyber is spelled C-Y-B-U-R. Or you can find me on LinkedIn. That's the best place to contact me. Or you can hit me up on X as well. With that, I hope you enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll be back Wednesday with more news, because chances are the cyber problem is not going to be fixed, especially if organizations that are supposed to oversee it, like the Department of Homeland Security, CISA, gets hacked themselves. So enjoy your Monday.
CyberSmart Morning News is written and produced by CyberGuy Productions. Feel free to email thoughts, comments, or suggestions to Darren@thecyberguy.com or follow Darren on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/in/DarrettMott. Thanks for listening.